Hi, welcome to the Ecosystemic Futures Podcast. I'm your host, Ed Powell, CEO at TensorX, where we leverage the cloud, the crowd, and AI to drive system design, inform corporate strategy, and optimize operational performance. As our world is increasingly digital and interconnected, ecosystemic models are reshaping the fundamental frameworks within society, industry, economy, and policy, and reframing how we innovate and build resilient futures. In this series brought to you by SocianWorks in collaboration with NASA Convergent Aeronautics Solutions Project, we're exploring these new ecosystemic models and the impacts they will have on the future. Over the next three episodes, we'll be diving deep into quantum sensing, how it is being applied today, the possibilities it holds along with potential pitfalls, and finally, the key ingredients to ensuring a positive framework as we move into the future. My co-host today is Gary Hunter. Gary is a senior electronics engineer at the NASA Glenn Research Center. Gary?
Hi, I'm Gary Hunter at NASA Glenn Research Center. I spent over 30 years in the development of sensor technology and sensor systems, trying to implement or demonstrate new technologies in a range of applications. These applications have included launch vehicle leak detection, aircraft fire monitoring, putting a long-lived lander on the surface of Venus, and measuring emissions from a jet engine. In the biotechnology area, the development of a home breath monitor for asthma. I presently work in the Convergent Aeronautics Solutions mapping activity, which is associated with this podcast.
Joining us as our guest today is Jeff Buxbaum, a medical officer at the National Cancer Institute. Welcome, Jeff.
Great to be here today, Ed and Gary. I'm here mostly, your audience is going to wonder why I'm here, and I was told I should explain myself, so I'm going to try to do that quickly. I'm a physician scientist at the National Cancer Institute, and I'm a pediatric radiation oncologist, so I treat little kids with cancer. But my background includes quantum physics, includes computational physics, and includes structural biology, including X-ray crystallography and NMR. So I'm a bit of a polyglot in terms of science. And what I'm guilty of is summarizing and integrating ideas and meetings and conversations with colleagues. And so one of Gary's colleagues, a futurist at his center, was at a meeting with me looking at material science, and he felt that this topic would be of interest to your audience. So I was asked to join, and here I am. So I'm at your service. I have some interesting things to discuss with you guys today, I hope.
Great, Jeff. Thanks for that introduction. As we look at quantum sensing, I was wondering if you could provide some definition and context around the history of your work, and specifically your interest in quantum sensing.
Sure. My focus in quantum sensing came about through a synergy of a real need to redefine dose for patient delivery and ways to do that. Fundamentally, dose is delivered medically in terms of milligrams or in terms of energy units. And we found in the lab, and we actually funded these decisions to go forward with defining dose really as the biological response to treatment. And different people, different kinds of people in different situations respond differently to treatment. Not everyone gets cured, obviously. Not everyone has toxicity. That is really the fundamental need. And so quantum sensing appealed to me because it would allow dynamic biologic response evaluation and measurement in a way that can't be done with clinical standard approaches. And the more I read about it, the more fascinating it became. So I joined the working group of the NIH, which has been in existence since just about 2 years, looking at this topic and trying to integrate it with the future of NIH and moving along with an OSTP-driven U.S. government approach to whole of government, which started around 2018, to move the U.S. government research apparatus into a quantum state. All that can be described and read about at quantum.gov public website. But that's my background. And I think that quantum sensors have a huge opportunity to really revolutionize medicine as well as other areas of human interaction. Over.
Thank you, Jeff. Two questions. When you say dose, you're referring to a dose of a chemical, radiation? What might that be, please, as for our audience?
Sure. A dose, if you go to your doctor, it gives you a pill, or she gives you a pill, and the pill's 5 milligrams of something 3 times a day. So dose is an exposure to a physical quantity of something and a time sequence of something. So as a radiation doctor, we give children or adults grays or joules per body mass equivalent, kilogram body mass equivalent energy to their tissue, to their bodies. So it's an energy. The issue is that the response to that physical quantity varies. And so the reason that I was interested in quantum sensing was to try to bring a dynamic capacity to study biology closer to reality. It's very difficult to study how things change in very small volumes affordably to the public. The ideal setting would be some sort of wearable thing that would tell you if a patient was doing well or not doing well all the time.
Okay. And so in a sense, what you're trying to do is tailor the treatment to the individual patient to make it more effective.
Absolutely. And the irony of this is in the old days, they would call something the erythema dose if they treated a patient in my field. And as you would treat a patient until they turned so red that you had to stop, and that was what everyone got. Well, that wasn't necessarily the best way to go. And with molecular biology and genomics information, there are ways of looking at how people can best be treated. The most important discoveries in the last few years, in my opinion, are that by treating someone, you induce a response state, and that response state might be treatable by agents that were not necessarily going to be effective at the beginning of therapy. So if you have a patient and you say, oh, you should get this drug and that drug and this much radiation, you treat them, and then you study what happens, they might expose certain targets or certain new things during the treatment only because of the treatment that you can then take advantage of. So the approach to it has to be, in my opinion, more dynamic than it has been historically. And these quantum sensors allow for that more easily, in my opinion.
Can you please talk about quantum sensing then? And if you don't mind, some examples of what you mean by quantum sensing?
Sure. I'll cover a couple things about quantum sensing. The first thing that I read about quantum sensing was fetal heartbeats and non-invasive ways of studying fetal heartbeats with what are called MAG. Basically, you place a device against a pregnant woman's abdomen, and it can actually measure the electrical activity of the heartbeat of the fetus very early. And you can tell what's wrong with the baby. And if you have to do something emergently, you can do that. And with technology today, they can save pregnancies that way. So that's something that's been in process. They were huge machines, and now they've moved with quantum devices to tiny little handheld devices. And that kind of approach can be taken from a very few places with very fancy and expensive centers that very few people have access to the general public. The second approach, the second example of something that I think is important would be based on a nitrogen valence diamond quantum sensor. And these things can basically detect magnetic fields at the atomic level, and they can be perturbed by lasers, microwaves, pH, et cetera, et cetera. But these things can actually pick up single molecule structures. So I spent the better part of a PhD studying structural biology. And one of the two approaches in structural biology are these gigantic NMR machines. And they were millions of dollars, and they were very difficult to use. And there was competitive to get time on them and so forth. There are new versions of NMR machines that might be tabletop size, shoebox size, that use quantum sensors and very small amounts of particles are your samples. So it lowers the cost of entry. It democratizes the ability for people around the world to do the science, and it makes the sample size so much less that it makes it more approachable for the average science lab. It decreases the cost of science. A third thing that applies, I think, to NASA and to humans in general are these tissue on a chip experiments. So the first step is we try to move the use of testing of drugs or testing of techniques, including radiotherapy or toxic events like traveling through space. We want to get away from using humans or non-human primates as, quote, guinea pigs to find out what's going on. So there's been a large movement to move towards tissue or organ equivalent chips. So they've developed ways of studying biology on tissue arrayed on a chip, and very much like genetics chips, but they're tissue oriented and they're complicated. So they're starting to mimic brains and hearts and lungs and kidneys and such. It's not perfected, but it's getting there. The quantum sensors have the ability to take that technology, and they can sense changes physiologically with much less energy therefore not damaging the tissue chip. So you could take a quantum sensor and put a tissue chip in, let's say, space. Instead of having the tissue chip burn out after a few hours of being studied, it might last months with a quantum sensor, because the quantum sensor can use very low amounts of light or very low amounts of electrical fields or heat to study that sample. And you can learn in theory, potentially, what's going to happen through a course of therapy, through, let's say, cancer therapy or space flight or exposure to various toxins like microplastics. There are lots of things going on in the environment that we don't completely understand. And these kinds of technologies will allow us to explore things in ways that are safe and cheap.
I know you've partly covered it, but would you mind, just at a high level, to suggest how a quantum sensor works? What's it doing?
Well, firstly, I want to reassure the audience that quantum sensors are not that new, and they shouldn't be afraid of them. And the simplest example to think about would be an atomic or cesium clock. And these things were developed in the 60s, and they allowed for 16 decimal places of accuracy and timing, and they measure the vibrations of an atom of cesium, and essentially, they're in space in all the different satellites, and they allow GPS to work, and they allow various things to work. So they're entrenched in our society in ways that anybody has a Garmin watch that runs around or does a bike ride with a bike computer, runs around, or an Apple phone, and you're looking at your GPS on your cell phone, you're using a quantum device in your life already. It's there. So what a quantum device is, or a quantum sensor, is a device that uses the rules of quantum mechanics, which is the area of physics that applies to single atoms and single, essentially, electrons and protons at a level where things are a little bit different than they are at the macroscopic level. The data, the science, dates back to the 1920s. The physics and the equations are not new, but they're some of the more new and more, let's just say, non-intuitive areas of that. So when you look at life, quantum mechanics isn't what you see when you look at it and you throw a rock at a wall and it hits the wall. That's got quantum mechanics, but you don't think of it like quantum mechanics. Quantum mechanics is the stuff that keeps you from falling through the floor if you're in a two-story house. That's quantum mechanics. That's what holds the floor together. So it keeps your body from going through the floor. What a quantum sensor is, diamond is made up of a huge array. I'll give an example of an NV sensor, a quantum sensor. So diamond is made up of carbon. And you can synthetically make diamond. And it's a huge array of carbon. Think of a sort of an ice cube or a keyboard. You've got all these little dots in a nice orderly fashion. And you can, in a laboratory, naturally this happens, but in the lab, people can put in little imperfections with nitrogen, with a little empty space next to the nitrogen for a valence shell. Okay, so you've basically got these little itsy bitsy imperfections and a huge array of carbon. Based upon magnetic fields, you can measure changes in energy in that valence. So if you fire a laser, let's say, at that little sample at just the right frequency, you can measure fluorescence that comes back because that little shell, that little electron splits and goes in different energy states. I think the explanation of that is beyond the scope of this conversation, but the bottom line is taking advantage of that little bit of imperfection in the diamond in a nuanced fashion, using various degrees of sophistication, you can study pH, magnetic field, electrical field, pressure. It's really quite, even gravity waves. So it's really quite a unique thing. And there are people actively globally looking at this. And it's really remarkable in the sense that you can go down to a single atom and study the actual surface of things using these kinds of detectors. And I think you're familiar with the comb that came out of Cleveland. I think you might have actually been part of it, Dr. Hunter. And basically, during COVID, people wanted to use this technology to study if you breathe out across something, can you tell someone has COVID really quickly? And they were able to, with a device that they call the comb, if you breathe across it, it could diagnose you with many things, one of which is COVID-19, very accurately with very low system, you know, not too many symptoms, so to speak. I hope I answered your question.
Oh, you did quite well, sir. No, I wasn't involved in comb, but sure wanted to be involved in such activities. And thank you for these answers. Ed, please.
So, yeah, this is fantastic. So what do you see as shaping the technological landscape of quantum sensing today?
Well, that's interesting. I think there are a bunch of different issues going on in the world. The quiet, the elephant in the glass store, or the bull in the glass, the ceramic shop or whatever, is security issues. And if you understand computation, so quantum sensing is, the quantum sensors make up quantum computing. The qubits are ultimately quantum sensors, and that they're the units of computing. And so it's a, quantum information science includes three different components: quantum sensing, quantum computing, and quantum communication. Today we're focusing on quantum sensing, but quantum sensing is affected by the need to ensure security for people, and quantum computers allow computation to be very fast. So the short version of what a quantum computer is it uses a bunch of quantum sensors that are aligned to allow states to be measured and put together, called qubits. And what qubits do is, unlike digital computers that are 0 or 1, and they sum up 0, 1, 0, 1, 0, 1, 0. So if you have four sensors, you can have four different answers. A quantum computer goes up by an exponential. So if you have 3 qubits, they can have 2 states at the same time, but it's 2^3 power 8. So if you have 100 of those things together, you have 2^100 power. So these things scale up ridiculously quickly. So the short version is, the secret version of how to keep things secret in the world, called DES 1024, RSA 1024, which was an encryption algorithm, was estimated in the early 90s to take 3.5 billion years for the best computers that we'd ever have. With these quantum computers, takes about 3.5 hours. So people became motivated. Once they found out that all that stuff was open for good, they had to figure that out. So that's been figured out. The U.S. government's responded to that. But the U.S. government has also noted that the quantum sensor is incredibly important for all sorts of discovery science. And discovery science is critical to human well-being. Everything from, I'm focused on human health. So from my perspective, I'll just be selfish and say, just from the human health perspective, there are a couple examples that matter. And they're, I guess, is most intrinsic into the process is going to be workforce capacity and the ability to collaborate and the ability for people to go to the nature of this podcast, which is ecosystemic well-being. So the ecosystem of quantum sensing requires, for my space, biomedical scientists and STEM scientists, physicists, engineers, material scientists, to get together and collaborate. Because the STEM person needs to understand what I need, and I need to understand what the STEM person can do. And so more than ever before, the quantum sensor is going to be very much a driving force for groups of people to come together. So I think that's what you're trying to ask. I got to it in a very roundabout fashion, so I apologize.
So it sounds like from your discussion that there are like three kind of a three-pronged components to the sensing, that you have the sensing and the computing, and these all work together in a way, but have to be done in a way that is also beneficial to humans. And so how important will it be that we get this mix right?
I think it's very important. I think, first of all, there is a global effort going on right now with people that are not necessarily friendly to the same values that, say, we have in the United States and Western Europe and the rest of the world, that are chasing after the quantum sensing technology at full speed. I believe these are public data. One country a little bit west of Japan is investing about $15 billion a year, and our current investment is $3.7 billion in the U.S., and the U.K. investment is $4.3 billion, just as examples. So we're dealing with a moving target in terms of opportunity costs and a need to keep our technology, our companies, and our people. Ultimately, I'm like Dr. Hunter. I'm a public servant working in the federal government. My boss is the U.S. taxpayer and the human race. And so as a physician, I swore an oath to try not to hurt people. So my goal is to have this stuff help people. And it's very important that this stuff become available to do that. And I see this as super critical because the world is facing some very serious issues. Just the top three might be global warming, or if you want to say climate change, trust, and I think trust crisis, And then I think that the idea of equity across healthcare is an important thing. So I think quantum sensors are part of that equation. I think they, both in their construction, they demand collaboration and they demand trust and they demand a certain way of doing things that I think is beneficial to society. And I think what they can be used for will keep us safer. I'll give one example. Just this week, a paper came out in Nature looking at this, and they had the example of, in 2020, the U.S. government said that all the air traffic controllers had to set up a system that was independent of GPS in case somehow the GPS satellites got knocked out. Just imagine a foreign player decided to knock out the GPS satellites. Well, quantum sensors can set up your location on the planet without using GPS. You can do between accelerometers and gravity detection. In theory, you can come up with methodologies using quantum sensing to know where you are without using GPS, as well as GPS does within a meter. So that kind of thing is important. And you say, well, what, Dr. Buxbaum, why does that have anything to do with health? One of the most important things that we're looking at in health is the whole idea of spatial, medical, and biological data science. So one of the most fascinating things I've ever seen was a meeting about 5 years ago now at NIH at the very, what I thought was the beginning of spatial medical science. So how does your health get affected by where exactly you live and where you walk and move from? And so do you live over a restaurant? Do you live over a truck near a truck stop? Do you live in an area that has certain kind of water, or did you ever live there? So in the future, they'll be able to keep track of that kind of thing. And people like me that are physicians will have access to your exposure history spatially and temporally. And these kinds of quantum sensors might be able to allow that to be very much in the general public's hands as opposed to just the elite's care. I hope I answered that. I went off a little bit.
That was great, Jeff. So for me, the key takeaway is that quantum sensing is playing a vital role in the scientific and medical communities today, and it has vast possibilities for the future. It's fascinating to hear about the broad applications and how it's changing the way we observe the world and the importance really of us getting that mix right. Gary?
This was excellent. Thank you very much. Some, and there are several, but some high-level takeaway points is that quantum sensing has been with us for a while, in a sense. I used to give talks that would involve nanotechnology, and I would give a very simplistic response to say, some people think nanotechnology has been with us for a while. It's called chemistry. In this other sense, what we were talking about today is that quantum sensing has been around and implemented in a range of applications. We just haven't been as quite aware of it or talking about it as indeed as we are today. And another point is the range and broad set of possible implications of adapting this technology and getting it right in order to enable new capabilities that we didn't have before. So, sir, thank you very much for the conversation today. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Gary. Thank you, Jeff, for sharing this fascinating insight on quantum sensing and various ways it can be leveraged today to improve observations. Be sure to check out the next two podcast episodes in which we continue the conversation with Jeff Buxbaum about quantum sensing, its potential pitfalls, and the importance of establishing a rigorous framework as we look forward to the future. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or your favorite place to access podcasts, and you can learn more at shoshinworks.com.